You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Well, good morning. Let me give you a little bit of background on our Exodus passage before we hear it read for you this morning. We're going to be reading from the Voice version. And what we've got in this passage is something that came along out in the middle of the desert. The Hebrews have escaped from Egypt, and they arrive at the big mountain in chapter 19, and they end up staying there for a very, very long time, to the point of impatience. But they're also feeling very relieved because they got away from Pharaoh. But once that starts to wear off, they start asking, what now? In Exodus 19:8, even before Yahweh says anything about commandments or suggests that Moses comes up to take two tablets and call me in the morning, the Israelites say, whatever you command, we will listen to. Whatever you command, we will obey. Full stop. Wow, I mean, they were really wanting something for guidance. Because in their mind, whatever Yahweh offered as rules for living has got to be better than Pharaoh, who they'd been living under for generations. What they got is what we know as the Ten Commandments. And our particular passage is taken from the first exposition of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20. Most of them are pretty obvious guidelines for living in community. It's a pretty good idea not to steal, not to lie, don't kill. These are all things that help you get along with your neighbors, right? But one of the commandments in particular is so radical, it's such an alternative to the commandments and the expectations of Pharaoh that it stands even to this day as one of the truly unique gifts that the Jews have given to the world. And so we're going to hear our passage from Exodus 20 read this morning. Maddie and Sam, come on up.
You and your family are to remember the Sabbath day, set it apart, and keep it holy. You have 6 days to do all your work, but the seventh day is to be different. It is the Sabbath day of Eternal, your God. Keep it holy by not doing any work, not you, your sons, your daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, or any outsiders living among you.
For the Eternal made the heavens above, the earth below, the seas, and all the creatures in them, 6 days. Then on the seventh day he rested. That is why he blessed the Sabbath day and made it sacred.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Let's pray. Loving and gracious Spirit, for these words of wisdom that come to us from so long ago that continue this day to be a challenge for us, even in our lives in the 21st century. We're grateful. As we consider these words for our lives, may the Spirit be at work here in this place so that none of us would leave this place unchanged. We pray as followers of Jesus. Amen. Shabbat Shalom! Oh, you can do better than that. Shabbat Shalom. You know what that means, right? Anyone? It's Norwegian. No, it's Hebrew. And Shabbat means Sabbath. And Shalom means peace, right? It's the same thing that Muslims would say when they say Salam Aleichem. But it's to acknowledge it's something that you can say to your Jewish neighbors on Friday from sundown until Saturday at sundown. You can say Shabbat Shalom. On my first visit to Jerusalem, it was really an eye-opener because we were there over the Sabbath. And I mean, the place shuts down No bus service, no anything that you would associate with the normal way the city runs. I mean, you couldn't even get a pizza. That's how bad it was. But I had a professor who studied at a yeshiva in order to get a better understanding of Orthodox Jewish practices. And one of Dr. Fleming's jobs at the yeshiva was to tear individual squares off of the rolls of toilet paper at the yeshiva and stack them next to the toilets for use on the Sabbath. What? What is that? Well, because tearing toilet paper off the roll had been ruled as work by the Rebbe at this particular yeshiva. And so in order to avoid doing work, you had to prepare ahead of time and make sure you had a sufficient stack of toilet paper squares. Now, that is an extreme example, but it's out there. You get the idea of the degree to which people can take this. But imagine my surprise when just this spring, I'm rebooting the display on my refrigerator. We put a couple of new components in it. And all of a sudden, the message on the display flashes, Sabbath mode, and then the refrigerator, everything turns off. And I'm like, oh no. Well, for super observant Jews, even turning on a light during Shabbat, it's equivalent to kindling a flame, right? When you flip the switch, you're kindling a flame. And that is a violation of Shabbat. That is work. So in Sabbath mode, and check your own refrigerators out, if they're anything in the last 20 years with an electronic thing, it will have Sabbath mode. And what that means is when you open the door, the lights don't come on, right? So you're not guilty of kindling a flame. But guess what? You better close the door quickly because the compressor is not coming on either, right? So it's not going to get cool again. Unless, of course, now they've gotten smart and they've got this sneaky delayed compressor thing. So once you close the door and walk away, that's when the compressor comes on. So you can't be associated with having turned it on, right? Because you're in the next room by now. So it's just one of those things. Ovens have them. All kinds of things have them. Now, it's pretty clear that when you're in an Orthodox neighborhood in Israel or even in New York City, on the Sabbath, there are special accommodations in hotels and in other public places. But earlier this year, I walked into that bastion of Judaism, the Ronald Reagan Hospital at UCLA, and voila, what was there? A Shabbat elevator. Out of the three elevators there, one of them is dedicated to be a Shabbat elevator. And you can see, maybe you can't read the actual dates, but it has a list of all of the holidays on which this elevator is going to stop at every floor on Jewish holidays and on Shabbat. That way, if you're an observant Jew, you can wait for the elevator to get there. You can step on when the doors open, the doors will close, and you will go up to the next floor. And you can step off when the door is open. You don't have to press any buttons, see? So you're not kindling a flame. You're just taking advantage of something that just happens to already be happening. So these are some of the things that you're going to see. This kind of thing makes me wonder what the density of observant Jews has to be before a Shabbat elevator is installed. Is it just one, or is it many? Is it something that you want to do to welcome people? I mean, it's an interesting thing to consider. But all of these examples are part of what have become, in many people's eyes, a more legalistic expression of what started out as a good idea, then has come to be misused to show a kind of public piety about, look how observant I am. It's by no means limited to the Jewish tradition. You might remember in the 1981 film Chariots of Fire, Eric Liddell, he was a Scottish sprinter, And he was a Christian missionary, and he was expected to win the gold medal in his best event. But it turns out that his best event was being held on Sunday. So he disqualified himself from his best event because his particular evangelical take on the Sabbath forbade him from running on Sunday. But for most Christians, I think keeping the Sabbath is like the one commandment most people are pretty non-committal about. Right? Look, I'm working. No, that's another issue. You know, we can just say, you know, that's a throwback. It's a throwback to prehistoric times, right? Might have made sense then, but not so much now. But no, say a lot of people. A lot of spiritual directors, a lot of theologians are starting to speak out and say, people like theologian Walter Brueggemann, who says, considering our challenges in the 21st century, things like keeping the Sabbath may be the most radical of all of the commandments. Walter Brueggemann even wrote a book called Sabbath as Resistance, Saying No to the Culture of Now. Doesn't that sound good? Being able to say no. He writes, some people keep Sabbath all the while scheming for commodities. This is the epitome of multitasking. He says, in my view, the most unwelcome form of multitasking is with the cell phone. On the phone while at dinner with a guest or while driving, but a much more poisonous form of multitasking is taking notes during a church service. Not notes on the sermon. That's good. Keep doing that. Not notes on the sermon. But when you are making a grocery list or a list of calls that you have to return, even in your mind, when you're thinking, dang, why am I here? I could be doing 9 other things, right? I hear the guilty laughter. Multitasking is the drive to be more than we are, to control more than we do, to extend our power and our effectiveness. Such practice yields, according to Brueggemann, a divided self. Because when you're multitasking, you can give full attention to nothing. Right? Nothing. So your life becomes about nothing. Jesus offers an ominous characterization of multitasking in Matthew. Remember where he says, no one can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Now, Brueggemann suggests that to serve God and wealth at the same time is impossible. It's like keeping Sabbath and at the same time planning for commerce, in other words, making your shopping list or something like that, right? It's like being in the middle of making love, but all the while you're watching the clock. Or it's like praising Jesus when you're preying on the poor and taking advantage of them. Such multitasking with a divided heart, with a divided attention, means that there is no real work stoppage, right? You've never stopped really working. There's no interruption in the frantic attempt that we have to get caught up. If we practice tasks, and this is one of those great Walter Brueggemann words, tasks of acquisitiveness, Tasks of acquisitiveness while trying to communicate with our brothers and sisters, what we do is we become commodities to one another, to be bought and sold and traded and cheated. When I lived in Australia, arguably one of the least religious countries on the whole planet, Sunday was taken seriously as Sabbath. You had better plan ahead, because guess what? All of the shops are closed. Not even corner convenience stores. Everything is closed. Perth is a town of 1 million people at that point. And in the Saturday paper, they would publish the two gas stations in all of Perth that were open. And the gas stations would rotate through the year as to which ones would have to be open on Sunday. People took the day off. Barbecue, sports, family, friends. One or two of them actually went to church. But it was a day that collectively, as a culture, was set apart. You take a break from the rat race and what Brueggemann would call the production-consumption society. Pharaoh wants you to be working every day. Every day. No breaks. And as a matter of fact, why don't you go out and buy something? The economy depends on it. But Commandment 4 throws a huge wrench in all of that. And it's not unintentional. The ancient world was a world of ceaseless labor. So the telling of this creation story that includes even God resting did something revolutionary. It had never been done before. It made rest sacred. It hallowed rest. Now, Genesis doesn't advocate a laborless world, a laborless ideal. It just recognizes that non-doing and renewal are an essential part of life. And in the first presentation of the Ten Commandments, where we get our passage today, the connection is made between God resting and you and I resting. It's no longer just a privilege of the rich. The passage is crystal clear in saying that even children are free on this day. Slaves cannot be made to work. Sojourners, immigrants who are living among you cannot be asked to work. What before was known as a privilege of the elite becomes a universal right for everyone. Look at the passage. Even animals have the day off, right? Nobody is allowed to work. Consider this for a minute. The biblical idea of Shabbat has no known parallel in all the ancient world. Nowhere. Babylon, Mesopotamian peoples, they all considered seven as a magical number, but not necessarily good magic. The Mesopotamian lunar calendar intentionally marks day 7, day 14, 21, and 28 as days that are dangerous and unlucky. People were advised to stay home and minimize activities those days. The Jews, not surprisingly, who were being worked as slaves by the Babylonians, they took that notion and they turned it on its head. And they made each one of those days an expression of holiness. In your face, Babylonian overlords, right? That's what they were doing. In Exodus 31, the Torah goes to even greater lengths to guarantee that Shabbat is central to people's lives. God says, keep my Sabbath as a sign between me and you for all generations. Oh, wait. This is one we've conveniently forgotten. You don't hear fundamentalists talking about this. Because just to be sure you're paying attention, God also adds, whoever does any work on this day shall be put to death. Oh, we've conveniently left that one out of our list. You'd think, though, that we who are perpetually tired and run down and on the verge of exhaustion would welcome one day each week where we could catch our breath. Yet Shabbat is not a winning idea for our culture as a whole, death threats notwithstanding. Most of the meaning of Shabbat is lost in this kind of legalistic detail of Sabbath law and has been kind of just set aside. But Thomas Cahill, who wrote The Gifts of the Jews, says that Sabbath is one of the unique contributions to the Jews, to Western civilization, because in no other tradition is the daily grind of survival brought to a stop to contemplate things beyond basic survival. The idea is just to punctuate the relentlessness of work with formal times of rest. You probably remember the familiar passage in Genesis where God rests from the work of creation. Has that ever struck you as strange? Isn't that delightfully anthropomorphic? That means putting human characteristics onto God? That God would get worn out and needs to rest. I love it. In the story, there's really no reference of Shabbat. There's no fixed day, and it doesn't obligate anyone else to observe it. But it does recognize the importance of rest and renewal and associates it with something that even God does. Even God does this. Rami suggests that we all give it a try. So here's where you can start taking notes. Are you ready? Pick a day, any day. Start at sunset one day and go for 24 hours. Plan ahead to have invited friends for dinner that first night. Invite them to bring something to read aloud and discuss together that helps elevate the conversation above the mundane kind of conversations we mostly have to more spiritual topics, to more things of deeper import. No TV, no computer. So you can figure out how to reach out to loved ones, especially ones you haven't reached out to in a while. Write a letter, write a journal entry, take a long walk, read that book that you've had set aside for a long time. It isn't simply about taking a day off. It's a day to reflect, to broaden our perspective, to connect with others and the world in a way that doesn't involve furthering commerce or other superficial kinds of parts of life. Are you aware that our Mormon neighbors often on Monday night practice family home evenings? You aware of that? This is to devote attention to one another and to conversation about important topics in their family, but in the world as well, and in their faith. I mean, that's a great idea. Some families across the country are creating do-nothing days. Do-nothing days. So that they can stay home and learn that quiet time can be a better activity than driving everyone everywhere all the time. The message is to slow down and live rather than continually doing something and being somewhere. The chores can wait till tomorrow. It's about taking a day to rest. Fred and Marianne Brissot give us a couple of examples that they've actually tried and they recommend. They're the authors of The Spiritual RX. Don't wear your watch or consult clocks. Many of us don't wear watches anymore because we're always obsessing about our cell phones. So stop multitasking, right? Just do one thing at a time. Put your smartphone in a box. This is not to say that you shouldn't be paying attention because with me, with older parents and with kids, I don't want to be away from the phone in case there's an emergency. But I also want it somewhere where I'm not going to just be able to conveniently pick it up and obsess on it like I normally do, right? Put it somewhere where you have to be intentional to go answer the phone or what have you. Try a day of silence. You'll find that when you don't speak, the pace of everything seems a lot slower and more deliberate. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Zen monk, has stated, "Life is so short. We should all try and move more slowly." So he says, go for a slow walk around the neighborhood This is not to get your cardio time. This is to do a slow, contemplative walk. Now, this one may be the hardest for you to consider. I know it is for me, so I don't mean to project this onto you, but I'm going to try this. Resist the impulse to hit the door close button on elevators. Right? Do you ever do that? You get in and you're like, rah, 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 rah. If you look, that button is often the most worn out button in most elevators, right? So even just that little practice might slow you down a little bit. In his book, Losing Moses on the Freeway, Chris Hedges affirms the idea that Sabbath can be glimpsed in what otherwise might be disjointed everyday moments. He says, the Sabbath is about honoring those we love and those who love us. Honoring the essence of the divine. By turning away from work, from the world, to cherish those we love, we honor the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not about necessarily one whole day. It's about taking time for a daughter's basketball game, a son's track meet, a dinner where a family talks, and not being distracted by everything else going on. Sabbath is a moment when a couple intentionally sits down on a bench for a conversation and reaffirms their love. Sabbath is the time set aside to nurture all that gives us meaning in life, all that makes life worth living. The Sabbath is the recognition that work and all the hours we spend making a living are, in fact, the means to this end, to the ability to have and sustain love. When we ignore the Sabbath, we destroy that which we should be working to achieve. That's why we're working, so we can have this time apart. Preacher Harry Emerson Fosdick would agree and gives us our stream of thought for today. One who cannot rest cannot work. One who cannot let go cannot hold on. One who cannot find footing cannot go forward. Practicing Sabbath is not about showing how well you can follow rigid rules. It's definitely not about getting caught up in a culture where the rules overshadow our humanity. It's about being intentional, about setting aside time to disconnect from that which keeps us distracted from the sacred, from our own thoughts, and from deepening our relationships with one another and engagement with life. Let me close with a word from Barbara Brown Taylor, who writes, at least one day in every seven, pull off the road, park the car in the garage, close the door to the tool shed, and turn off the computer. Stay home, not because you are sick, but because you are well. Talk someone you love into being well with you that day. Take a nap, take a walk, take a long, luxurious lunch. Test the premise that you are worth more than what you produce. That even if you spend one whole day being good for nothing, that you are still precious in God's sight. And when you get anxious because you are convinced that this is not so, remember that your own conviction is not required, because this is a commandment. Right? It's a commandment. And she says, your worth has already been established, even when you are not working. The purpose of the commandment is to woo you to the same truth. Wouldn't you like spending a day just to be wooed? When we're intentional about keeping Sabbath, no matter how small a nod to the practice, we start to develop an attentiveness to life that otherwise gets overshadowed by the speed and the expectations of our everyday living. One day, just one day where we resist becoming commodities for one another to be bought and sold. One more cog in the production consumption machine. Slow down. Breathe deep, because you are loved, not for what you do, but for who you are. Shabbat Shalom.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.